Welcome to FemLead, the podcast on female leadership and role models. This show aims to inspire and equip you with the tools you need to navigate your career plans. FemLead brings inspiring career perspectives and strategies to guide your path to success. Your host, Alexandra, will interview role models on new exciting topics with each episode. If you like what you hear, give us a review and subscribe to the show on your preferred streaming platform. Enjoy.
Welcome to a new episode of FemLead Podcast. Today, we will deep dive into the STEM field, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we will discuss with Anne-Sophie Nielsen, VP of Software Development at Workday. In her role, she's responsible for the continued technical evolution of the software as a service offering for measuring and improving employee engagement. The product was founded on the belief that work should work for people. Companies need to continuously listen to their employees and drive meaningful changes at all levels of the organization. Today, it's truly an honor to welcome Anne-Sophie. Anne-Sophie, welcome. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much. I'm good. I think that our conversation here talks about such an important topic, and I'm happy that we get to see each other again. For the listeners, we've collaborated in the past for a CTO panel at the Tech Barbecue, a tech event here in Scandinavia. And in the meantime, Anne-Sophie has done some amazing things, and she's talking now about women in tech around different conferences. You are also a promoter of women in tech online a lot. I see a lot of your posts, and I'm very happy that today we can talk a bit about it. And how can we introduce this topic to people that maybe didn't consider it? And also for leadership and people in companies, what should they know about women in STEM? But without further ado, I would like to start by pointing the fact that we see a lack of women in tech. To put it bluntly, what is your view on generally women in STEM? What should we understand of the status of women being represented in STEM nowadays?
Yeah, so unfortunately, there's still a too low percentage of women in STEM fields, and specifically in tech. It's been increasing, but it's been increasing fairly slowly. So I think we need to do more to get to the proportion where we are equally represented in the STEM fields. I think there's a lot of great activities going around in the industry at the moment. Also, some of the educational institutions, universities, et cetera, are doing some great work to encourage more women to get into tech. And we do see those activities have a positive impact. And then I think the other piece to consider is not just getting women into the fields, but also keeping them in those fields, because sometimes when women get out into the tech industry, they end up leaving it. And I think we as companies have a responsibility to make sure that we create those inclusive workplaces where women also feel a sense of belonging, and where there is support and career opportunities for women, and they can have the work-life balance that fits them as a person.
I love that. Please tell me, what do you think are some barriers for women in technology? Because pointing out the fact that sometimes it's not necessarily the fact that you do not have enough women in technology as a representation. It's more the fact that they don't necessarily stay in those industries. Why is that? What do you think?
I think there are many different barriers to having more women in technology. The first of all is, you know, as you mentioned, getting them into that career. People need to be able to imagine themselves having a tech career. And part of that is seeing examples of others that are like themselves that have made that decision and are having good experiences in the tech industry. I also think that part of the solution is really introducing them to it early, introducing children to programming early so they have an idea of what that is. A lot of children are used to using various tech tools, but they're not actually creators, they're not programming anything themselves. It was really encouraging last year, actually, where we did a project together with a class of sixth graders as part of the larger coding class initiative in Copenhagen, where the kids were taught programming in kind of a visual programming language. So it was very easy to get started with. And they were given a task to solve. And it was really amazing to see how innovative they were in, you know, the kinds of solutions they could come up with and design and implement. And, you know, they got some hands-on experience with programming rather than it being kind of a strange thing that only geeks can do, because there are not a lot of kids that probably see themselves as geeks. So that's very limiting if you can only get the people to see themselves as geeks. And that was really lovely to see, I think, and something we're definitely doing next year. But those are like just some of those small initiatives that we can all take to make sure that women and girls see a future for themselves in tech and in STEM.
Definitely. When did you know that a career in STEM is something that you want to pursue?
Yeah, that wasn't something I definitely didn't know that from the start. I had a friend in school who introduced me to making websites for a school project when we were in ninth grade. And that's how I got into playing with HTML and soon after that also JavaScript. So that was kind of my intro. And then during high school, I helped some local small businesses set up their first website. This was back in the late 90s. So a lot of companies didn't have websites at the time. But it actually took me a while to kind of realize that this could be a career. I was active in a science organization when I was in high school, and that's when I started meeting people who were studying computer science, and I kind of realized, oh, this could be more than just a hobby. I think what really attracted me to tech was that it seemed there was so much more evolution ahead, like so much more that had to be built and discovered. And, you know, that's maybe 25 years ago now, and you know, I think that's still the case. Like, just imagine how cool things were be able to build in 25 years from now. I think that's an amazing prospect to look into when you're a young person choosing where to go in your career.
Definitely. And on this topic, I think you mentioned something very relevant, and that is the fact that you were quite introduced to the topic as being quite young, and that you saw a potential career by being passionate about, you know, this cool new thing. In tech, we talk a lot about inclusivity, especially when it comes to product development and the need to have diverse teams to develop products so that it includes everyone. What is your view on the future of tech, considering all of these discussions that we're having in the last few years about representation in general?
Yeah, I think representation is important, but representation is also not necessarily the only thing. It's also about feeling included and belonging in the workplace. I'm very happy to see that there is a lot more focus on kind of that, you know, some of the more forward-looking workplaces, that something like bias is something you need to educate yourself on and to be aware of. It's something you need to actively combat. Like, for example, here at Workday, we do give all employees training in diversity inclusion topics, and hiring managers get trained in how do you do inclusive hiring practices instead of just doing what you used to do and that was producing the kind of results that we're all used to seeing, which is an underrepresentation of women. I do think over the last couple of years, the gap has probably widened between workplaces that take an active stance and workplaces that don't think they have a problem. You know, I sometimes see people in newspaper articles or in LinkedIn claiming, you know, we don't have diversity and inclusion issues because we always just hire the best person for the job. But like, how do you know who's the best person if you don't realize that your own idea of who's the best person to hire may be tainted by who you are yourself or by the norms that we have in society? Then you're not that far along on the journey yet. So I think that piece is really important.
Yeah, you touched on one of my my next questions, and I'm very happy you've mentioned it, because the idea of what success or the right role for or the best hire represents, it's also based on our internal understanding of, you know, the role models we've had, what we've seen on TV, our cultures and our backgrounds. And when it comes to tech as a subject, technology and women, there is a lot of people, like you said, who don't believe in gender bias, or, you know, we include everyone when we take decisions. What do you see changed in the last few years when it comes to women and gender bias, especially decision making? Do you see it going for the better, or do you see that there's maybe we're still stagnating in some inputs that we're getting? What is your feeling about this?
I think there is more of a focus on it's not the responsibility of the women to change things if they don't like how, you know, the workplace is. I think we all have a responsibility to provide feedback on what we're experiencing in the workplace, but ultimately it's a leadership responsibility to create an inclusive workplace. And I'm happy to see also diversity and inclusion officers being hired, or heads of D&I being hired into many companies and given a strategic role really in the company and shaping the future of the company, because I think the change needs to come from the top. That's really the big change that I think we've seen within the last couple of years. Companies acknowledge that there is work to do in this area and they need to bring all employees along on that journey.
Very, very well said. You've had yourself a very, you know, impressive career. When we met, you were the CTO of Peakon, and now Peakon was acquired by Workday, and now you work in this great setup where you have diversity and inclusion at the top of your agenda as well. What do you advise leaders who maybe don't consider diversity and inclusion at the top of their agenda or important at all when it comes to the way their company develops?
Yeah, I think that's interesting because I'm struggling to see a lot of leaders wouldn't put retention of key talent on their, like, the top of their agenda or the attraction of talent. And I think diversity and inclusion is very ingrained in that because you're giving away quite a lot of the talent pool if you're not taking those areas seriously. So that's really what I would say to them. There is a very clear business case for diversity and inclusion. Obviously, it's also the right thing to do as human beings, but there is also a great business case in supporting those activities and retaining and attracting the best talent and really building those diverse teams that we know create great business results as well.
Yeah. I do have a use case question for you because you've said something in the beginning, and that is not seeing yourself in the team. I know a lot of the audience that listens to this podcast is female. I also have a lot of males that listen to interviews. And I would like to point out something I've heard, and I am quite sure you've heard as well. And that is working in teams where you don't have female colleagues and how you feel when you are not represented in another way in the team, including maybe leadership, but also just having different colleagues. What do you advise to women who actually feel that they don't fit in the workplace because they do not have other colleagues that they can, you know, relate to? And if this is maybe going beyond the advice for a woman who listens, what do you advise leadership? I mean, this is something that maybe we don't talk enough about, but it is a reason why people leave companies in some instances.
Yes, definitely. You know, that feeling of belonging, of making friends in the team is incredibly important. I think I was personally lucky when I started, my first job after graduation in a workplace that did have a lot of men, that those men were very inclusive of me and wanting to make friends with me and not considering gender a barrier to making friends. Because you might not always be able to fix the gender balance quickly, but you can definitely fix the way that people interact with each other, that you can make friends, that you can be great colleagues and peers at the same level as someone else. And that also doesn't just go for gender. It can also be people that are different places in their lives. Maybe someone's young, single, doing lots of partying on the weekends. Maybe someone else is not getting enough sleep because they have a young child. Maybe someone else is thinking about, you know, planning their retirement. And there are lots of different kinds of diversity in teams, hopefully, and really making space for everyone to be who they are and not needing to fit into a specific mold for someone to want to be their friend, for someone to want to collaborate with them or mentor them when they come out. I think that's probably more important even than the representation, because the representation can take time, but the inclusive culture is something you can start building from the onset.
Definitely. Is there any advice that's for leaders / entrepreneurs? Let's talk also about entrepreneurs who are starting up their companies. When it comes to recruiting tech talent, something that you advise them to look at that maybe is not so obvious?
Yeah, I think it's important it doesn't become a checkmark exercise, that you're not just trying to hire two women because that's what you need to do, but be open to the fact that talent really comes in many different shapes and sizing. And also, a number of people are now coming into a tech career after maybe starting out in some other field, especially women, actually. And we see a lot of people coming through code camps in different ways. I think it's important to be applauding the fact that they're making that change to move into tech and not judging them for maybe making a different choice early on. I think it's also really important to not make too many assumptions about what someone wants to do, but really have a conversation with them. You know, early in my career, I had children. That didn't mean I wasn't ambitious at work, but I think it's important to ask people, what kind of accommodations do you need to be successful? Really small things can make a difference. And having that mindset of, instead of just saying, you know, oh, person X is close to retirement, so they probably don't want to do this interesting thing, or person Y is going on maternity leave, so they probably also don't want this interesting project. You know, ask them what they want, ask them what they need to be successful and take on new challenges.
Yeah, definitely. Really, the conversation about what is it that you want to do? What are your ambitions? Or what do you see as your career development plan, to share it with those that can influence it and really help it move forward? I really love that. And I'm very happy you're sharing this also from your position of overseeing so many different teams over the years and having a lot of experience in software development. You know, the industry will just continue to develop anyway. So we don't really have time not to be inclusive and not to, you know, consider all of this advice. So thank you a lot for sharing that. When it comes to starting up, what reflections do you want to share for graduates that are looking to kickstart their tech careers?
I think it's important to find a good team to start in. They do help shape how you think about things like software development or what your specific field is, but also very much people who are invested in your growth. For some graduates, it can be the right thing to do to go on a kind of more formal graduate program like we have at Workday, where there's like special support and attention to graduates to help them be successful in the first tech job, because it can be a big transition to make. In other cases, it might be in a smaller company with a small team, but where there are people who are willing to be mentors. I would also really advise people to take on some challenges that stretch their abilities, because that is how you grow. You need to get out of your comfort zone a little bit, but if you have a team that's supporting you, that you could ask for help. I think generally, don't be afraid to ask for help. Actually, most people are more willing to help than you think. Looking back, that's definitely something I should have probably done myself a couple of times in my career. I think I was quite focused on trying to do well and maybe less, you know, open to showing how vulnerable I was and letting other people help me. But we can co-create that environment where it's okay for people to ask for help.
Definitely. So ask for help as a key to your development as well. And so that someone else can know that in this period, within this regard, you could need some help and you would then be successful after you pass this setup. I really love that. Is there something that, you know, in the beginning of your career really surprised you? Is there some reflection that you have from your own start in the tech industry?
Oh, that's a good question. Something that surprised me. You know, it was quite new coming out in the workplace. I had obviously had student jobs, but you kind of get those odd side projects that aren't really important to deliver. And when you go out and get kind of real job, there's a lot more riding on the deliverables that you have. I think I was actually surprised that I was given quite a big and challenging project together with someone else who was a new graduate in my first job. I'm incredibly thankful for that now, because getting a stretch target and having people that believed in us really made us advance quite quickly, I think, in our skills. So that was really great. Yeah, what else surprised me? I think I had a pretty good idea what I was going into, having had some student jobs. But it's just small, simple things. Like, how does it actually work when you need to quit a job? How, you know, what about pension savings? Lots of these very practical things you think wouldn't be a problem, but actually, when it's the first time you do it, things are hard.
So basically, it's okay if you do encounter some situations where you don't know the answers to, because at the beginning of your career, you just don't know about it. You need to go through it to learn it. So that's definitely a message here.
Yeah, so that's also maybe finding your sin a little bit in, you know, the fact that you are going to be challenged on many questions, simply because it's the first time that you do it. Don't hold back. Like, try it. You'll figure it out. A lot of people figured it out before you.
Definitely. What is one piece of advice that you really tell people? Something that was really important for you to know when you receive it? Something that really sticks with you?
I don't recall any like very specific advice. I think I was lucky to be surrounded by people who let me be me and really gave me those challenging projects, great colleagues to be around. I think I probably could have used some advice on, you know, the first couple of years being a new mom and starting my work life at the same time. Those are like two big new things at the same time. So I probably could have used more advice than I got. But again, I probably also could have asked more for it.
Definitely. I think this is a topic that is very relevant for many people, specifically because we don't really talk about women and their maternity leave and then getting back to work. So just, you know, managing that situation. Since you've mentioned it, do you have some piece of advice for moms that listen to us and they're new moms and they will go soon to work or they just started going back to work?
Yeah, I think you have to just pat yourself on the shoulder and say, you know, good for me that I'm trying to do a lot of important things for myself in my life. Do take the time to go on leave. Do also share that leave with your partner if you have one. I think one of the very good developments we've seen in recent years is more men also taking their share of the leave, which I think helps women transition back into the workplace. So that's really important. Enjoy the time that you get away from work because you get to practice some completely new skills that's going to make you also a better employee when you come back. You know, you learn to really prioritize your time and juggle multiple things. There's a lot of good things to take away from that. And it's also time to reflect on what's really important for me. Maybe there are things you want to do different in your work life. That doesn't mean being less ambitious, but maybe you get a bit more crisp on what's really important for me and how do I see the next 5-10 years of my work life. Take that time now that you have it.
Definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think a lot of people that are in this situation will really appreciate some real pieces of advice from your experience. So thanks a lot for covering that as well. When it comes to women that maybe don't have confidence to think that they might have a successful career in tech, they just maybe don't see themselves as someone who could become a CXO. What do you tell them?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think it really goes back to also having some role models in tech, which is also one of the reasons I spent some time on that as well, because I've definitely had the feedback that it helps women to feel like, oh, I could also do that when they see someone that maybe looks like them that's gone that way. I think if you're trying to build up that confidence, there are really two ways you can go about it. And maybe you need a little bit of both, depending on how your brain works. First, there's kind of the analytical approach. What are the pros and cons? There are really a lot of pros for a tech career. Tech talent is in high demand. Employers are competing to be the most attractive workplaces for IT specialists to work. Also, maybe just think about what is really the worst that can happen. Probably not a lot, right? Worst case is probably, you know, that, yeah, maybe it wasn't as fun as you expected and you might decide to do something else. But because IT is so pervasive in everything we do in society, the skills that you picked up on that journey to a tech career is probably going to be useful even in a lot of other jobs too. But that's kind of speaking to the logical side of the brain. I think if you think about the more emotional side, do you have someone around you who can help cheer for you and maybe encourage you to make that leap? Could be a friend, could be a partner, grandparent, you know, who's the right person for you to go to that will give you that emotional support to make a big decision in your life?
Thank you. Thank you so much for covering that. Okay, so my next question is about challenges in navigating your career path, and it's about the moments where you encounter challenging, difficult situations. What do you advise women that maybe have difficult situations at work and they don't really know how to manage it? And this can be something related to their role position. It can also be related to culture. How do you navigate challenging situations? What is your mindset?
I think it's very important to trust yourself and start really listening to what makes you happy, not necessarily what other people think you should be doing. Generally, a lot of the advice the women get is very intended to kind of steer towards the mainstream path, and that might not be the right one for you. I think it's okay to make a bold career move, even when you don't exactly know where that's going to lead, as long as you're personally excited about it. I would also encourage people to really think about voting with their feet. There are lots of good employers out there. So if they feel like they're in a situation where the culture isn't, you know, shifting in the way that it should, or they're at a dead end and they've really tried speaking to people around them and their manager about it, they have options. You don't always have to stay in a situation that isn't making you happy, but be clear about why it's not making you happy and what it is that you are then searching for next time you make a move, either internally or externally from the company.
Definitely. This requires a bit of reflection. And I feel that if you, the listener, feels that this is your case, take the time and have that reflection and maybe talk with some peers or some friends about how you feel and the situations you're in, and then decide if it's really the best for you, there's any way to mitigate it, and so on. I think this is super, super important. So thanks a lot for covering that as well. When it comes to essential accomplishments, I do want to point out your CXO career, because you have had some very cool roles in companies in Denmark and abroad. And I think you've had a lot of accomplishments throughout your career. But what do you think are some lessons that helped you reach this milestone of becoming, you know, CXO and then managing different organizations when it comes to the technical infrastructure? What are some lessons that you would want to share with us?
First of all, I think the people side is just as important as the technical side, if not even more. When you go into a leadership role, you're not going to succeed with any of the technical accomplishments that you want to achieve if you don't get the right, you know, team spirit around it. One of the things I'm personally quite proud of is in my previous job, when I was CTO at the online supermarket Nemly.com, you know, we had a really big project where we changed the whole e-commerce platform and redesigned the user experience. And we had a very small team, actually. So we had to work quite a lot with partners and kind of get that whole thing orchestrated. And, you know, I think the best part was really seeing it finally deployed and then getting the user feedback who loved the site. I think that shows what you can do with a fairly small team if you kind of have that North Star of where do you want to go? Do we all see the purpose in what we're doing? Because there are going to be lots of challenges when you have a big project. But what is it that you are aiming for? What's the North Star? That's hugely important. And then obviously before, just recently, I've been the CTO of Peakon, and I was part of the team that was really heavily involved in the due diligence process with Workday that led to Workday's acquisition of Peakon. And I think that was also a huge testament to the product that we had developed, but also equally to the team. So I would really emphasize that team aspect of, you know, becoming successful, working with people and putting them in an environment where they can do their best and really be their best selves at work every day.
That's very beautifully said. I'm sure that right now you have some very interesting projects and your career develops very nicely with Workday and being now in a certain new environment, right? What do you think is the most rewarding part of your role now at Workday?
You know, back to the people side, I think it's really seeing people grow and succeed as they get new and bigger challenges. It's always great when someone's kind of able to make the next step in their career. I also really still love seeing our products evolve and customers being happy with the new capabilities that we provide them. For me, the product I work on is also a very important part of that. And, you know, you mentioned that we build the Peakon employee engagement platform that allows employees to provide confidential feedback to the company. And that really supports organizations in listening to their employees and making better workplaces where people can thrive. So I feel like I'm kind of working on the same theme, both on like the product side and the people side of building great workplaces. So it all kind of comes together now.
That sounds very cool. So congrats also on the fact that you've continued this journey with Workday, because Peakon itself was a great product, and now you've went further and integrated that with Workday. So that must be a very cool journey for you as well personally to be through that process. So that's very nice. When it comes to, you know, summing up our conversation here on advice giving, looking back, would you have done anything differently?
It's always hard to imagine, like, what would have been the difference if I made a different choice. But maybe going back to a theme I mentioned a little bit before, allowing myself to ask for help more, especially I think when I was new in my first management role a bit more than 10 years ago, I was just too preoccupied with trying to be successful. I think it would have been a good investment to have allowed myself to be more vulnerable and open about what I needed help with. Now I feel a little bit more at ease with myself and my abilities. And now I don't see myself as like less of a person for opening up or asking for support from others. So I'm trying to pass that on.
Wow, that's really inspiring. Thank you so much for mentioning this very relevant and important piece of advice for everyone listening. It's okay to be vulnerable and sometimes not know all the answers and sometimes not have the best reply. It's okay. And things will normally naturally proceed further, even if right now you don't know everything. So that's very valuable to take. Thank you so much, Anne-Sophie. Before we close, I do want to go through the top five fire questions. So these are five questions where you can only reply with the answer to the question directly, and then we move on to the next one. What is one book you think everyone should read?
I really personally enjoyed the book that's called Hyperfocus by Chris Bailey that was published a few years ago. It's based on scientific research, and it's a very good guide to managing your attention, really being deliberate about when you're in productive focus mode and when you're doing creative work, and also giving yourself a break sometimes, because humans aren't really made for back-to-back meetings. And I think that's been even more important now in kind of our Zoom lives recently.
Definitely. What is the best piece of advice you have ever received?
Don't listen to other people's advice. I think was like just finding out what's right for you. It's good to listen to others, but like ultimately you know what's right for you.
Who is your role model?
It's a very tough question because I think there's so many inspirational people out there. I think I would say one of my first role models was really the Polish/French chemist and physicist, Marie Curie. She was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize, incredibly smart and ambitious, and did things no one had done before. And her daughter actually ended up also winning a Nobel Prize like 30 years later. So I think she's also been setting the next generation up for success.
Definitely. Anne-Sophie, the next question for you is, if you were to have another career, what would you choose to do?
I think I could have had many different careers because I've always been interested in so many different subjects. I think that's actually how I ended up in leadership, because I really like the aspect of using many different types of skills, where the specialist role that I started my career in was maybe a bit more narrow. I think specifically, I would have loved to find a career where I also needed to speak more different languages. In tech, English is really the universal language. That's great from a practical standpoint, but I would have loved to be challenged on having to learn to speak more languages, like professionally.
That's very interesting. If you could change places with someone, who would it be and why?
For a quick kind of change up, I think I would try and change places with someone on the International Space Station and, you know, try and see the Earth from space. That would be pretty cool. I wouldn't do a permanent swap though. You know, I'm pretty happy with my life as it is, but if I could do just a day on the space station, that would be fun.
That's very cool. I was not expecting that answer. So it's really, really cool to hear. Anne-Sophie, you've been very gracious with your time. Thank you so much for this interview. I think you've shared some very important pieces of advice and also a lot of your experience in how to progress in your career. And I hope many women are inspired to consider a career in software or in STEM otherwise. And they can reach out to you on LinkedIn, as we've discussed, if they want to keep in touch. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for listening today. I hope you enjoyed this interview and stay tuned for more interviews with inspiring female role models.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of FemLead Podcast. Share the news with your friends and follow us on social media at FemLead Podcast everywhere.